Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Labor Day weekend edition of Commodity Week.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Labor Day weekend edition of Commodity Week. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. With Greg Johnson from the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois. Let's check the numbers as they settled up in Chicago last Friday. We'll give you the day high, low, and overnight trade in the open outcry and electronic market from week to week. The Friday change: September wheat futures, a high this week is $7.71.5, a low at $7.13.5. The September settled $7.30, down 32.25. Soft red July for next year at $8.22.75 in Chicago, 13 cents lower. From the corn pit, September contract, 765.5, the high for the week, the low at 27.75. Settlement price there at $7.50, 2.25 cents lower. December futures at $7.60, finished 7 lower. September soybeans for the week, $14.56 on the high, the low at $14.11. September beans settled up 21.25 for the week at $14.36. November, $14.45, up 22.25. October live cattle futures at $114.80, settled $1.20 higher. September feeders were down 10 cents at $132.65. And October lean hogs at $85.17.5, finished 32.5 cents lower.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's start with this question, Paul Cooley. Given the break on Thursday, I want to know how scary that was, and the rally that came after it on Friday.
Well, Todd, a special tip of the hat for the Farm Progress Show, the way the University Ag School performed over there, and it was a lot of fun to be with all the WIL commodity club members over there. You did a beautiful job, and thanks for putting up with us over there.
Thank you so much. And one note about that, we're going to try to put those particular programs, which ran on our closing mark report, into the Commodity Week feed, so folks will be able to go back and get them.
You ask a wonderful question, and yes, it was very scary. There was all kinds of false rumors about a larger FC stone crop. There was probably a condition where the commodity funds had stopped buying, and there was, you know, a basic major sell-off by commodity funds. It gave us an opportunity to buy. The stone number came out, and, of course, it was scary bullish, both on corn and soybeans. So it was a wild ride. Some of the economic things were also a major part of the equation.
Greg Johnson?
I think it serves as a good reminder that a lot of the traders, a lot of the funds have this herd mentality. They all want to get in and trade higher on the same rumors or get out and trade lower on different rumors. So as a producer, getting stuff sold, it's going to be extremely hard to try to hit the high. I think we just have to wean ourselves from that thought process and just start thinking about selling at profitable levels.
Aaron Curtis.
Well, Todd, unfortunately, I think it's just going to be a sign of the times. I think we got more coming, especially with increased limits, increased capital requirements to margin this grain at these 750-plus areas. I think we're going to continue to see these kind of swings. So we just unfortunately got to continue to get used to it.
And Dan Zwicker.
Technically, Friday's action was a save. It was basically inside Thursday's range. So technicians would say, okay, the recovery rally was more neutral. And we still finished out lower on the week on wheat and corn, but beans, of course, was higher because they had a stronger breakout a week ago and then good follow-through on Monday. I think it probably kind of implies that maybe the market may consolidate here, patiently waiting on USA's report, I think, a week from Monday.
July wheat was down 13 cents. December corn was down 7. You said it was technically it was a save. That mean it was a save for the week, or was that just a save for the...
It was a save for the bulls because Thursday, there's no doubt about it, that kind of decline put an ugly look on the chart, especially when you're looking at a weekly chart. We were going to have some pretty good weekly closes. But anytime you get a big decline or a big advance and you don't have any follow through in the overnights, usually is a signal that that particular action was not as valid as it appeared during the regular session. And as a technician, as soon as you found out this morning that there was no follow-through action, you had to be a buyer. You had to get out of your short because there was no follow-through. So technicians bought it right out of the chute, and it continued to rally throughout the day.
Greg Johnson, when I look across the web, I was interested in a piece on AgWeb that has a yield map, and voluntarily producers are able to put in some of their yields. There's Sangamon County, Illinois yield of in the 180 bushel range, over 1,250 acres. But there are three or four of them in Illinois that range up in that top end. Some over in Kansas as low as 25, 30 bushels to the acre. I'm mostly interested in the Illinois numbers. Nothing from Iowa yet there. But the Illinois numbers, do they... Unlike past years where you're thinking the first numbers that come out are probably not the best indication because they're usually lower than what you might see, might those be the highs that come out?
Yes, I think so. The corn that was planted in April probably got to pollination with less stress than the corn that was planted in mid to late May. So I think we're hearing the better yields now. And we will, hear lower yields as we get into it. 140 to 150 could be a good average for central Illinois, and that's an average. That's not to say that there's not some 190, 200 bushel corn out there, but there's also 80 to 90 bushel corn out there. That's how you come up with that 140 to 150 average.
And Paul Cooley, the Landworth numbers were out. The FC Stone numbers were out. Both were lower than what USDA had projected in Landworth, way down at 143 bushels the acre.
And, of course, on Tuesday, we will see the Informa numbers. And, the general wonderment in the industry is just where will the USDA be? The big factor is that the temperatures, the lodging, the variability in the yields and the variability of the rainfall is awfully scary. And, of course, the one that I have to think that is the biggest drop of all, of course, when F.C. Stone talks about 168 in Iowa and the last USDA number was 177, gee whiz, that was a lot smaller than I dreamed of, Todd.
You think that's possible, Aaron?
I think it's possible. I think the USDA is still at this point will still be in that 149-150 area on September 12th. I think that's where the average yeses are probably going to come into. We'll see where we go from there. But this 143-146 area that FC Stone and Landworth come in, obviously surprising based on what we saw at the trade reaction today. But interesting to see on Thursday, we talked a lot about, or the market talked a lot about better than expected yields in Illinois, and then we turned back the other way here today. So a lot of variability out there. And it'll be interesting to see if that September number that the USDA comes out with if that ends up being the low water mark for corn yields.
I'm thinking the October number might be just as interesting or maybe more so once they put in the FSA acreage figures.
Yeah, I think we'll adjust the acres a little bit in the September report. We've seen some of those early numbers kind of leak out, you know, over the last couple weeks. But yeah, you're right. That October number, when we get those acres numbers in, obviously is going to affect production.
How much of a calculation do you think that might have once we get to October if these yield numbers are so much lower?
Well, this is just a guess on my part, looking at several crop scout types that do some work and survey work and that. I think there's a good chance that you could see upwards of 1 million acres lost in corn yet. I think the double crop soybean acreage of 4 million or whatever USDA has plugged in there, unless we get some pretty good rains, some pretty quick, those aren't going to yield enough to even register on the Richter scale. So harvested acres could fall off the cliff as you get into maybe that October number.
Greg, as the Andersons here in the east central part of Illinois, and you have a large draw area that goes into Indiana, brought corn in yet?
No, most of the corn samples that have been hand-shelled are in the 30 to 35% range, and unless there's some stalk quality or standability issues, most people are going to try to let that dry down a little bit farther before they get into harvest.
Mr. Cooley mentioned that there were some standability issues. Are you hearing that, and do you believe it is the question?
Well, I think the theory is that in a hot, dry year, the corn plant cannibalizes the stalk and sends those nutrients to the ear. So I would say the stalk quality probably is pretty poor this year.
Well, it looks to me like it will be a quick fall. Do you think?
Unfortunately.
Right. So then this final sort of question across the board for you as we head into the end of this first segment of the program is, in the last week and a half, we've heard, you know, short crop, long tail many times over. Do you think that's the case?
We could have a short crop. We definitely have a short crop. We could have a long tail, but a tail from where? I think we still need to make a higher high before we talk about a high end for the next 6 months or whatever.
Well, one of the things that is perplexing is we are hearing these stories about the big sales of Russian grain into the world marketplace. We even saw an article in the Wall Street Journal about an embargo of their grain shipments by rail into their port facilities. Gee whiz, that's a kind of a wonderful thing for Russia, but it does undercut the price and the exportability of our grains in the U.S. We haven't seen that kind of competition. The previous year, the Russians had a major drought, so they are out there selling grain at some very big discounts, and the U.S. exporters are taking note of it.
Aaron, follow up on that idea so that out of Russia, other places around the planet, there is a fairly large wheat crop, and it will be used for feed wheat in the globe, right?
Yeah, I think when we talk about feed wheat, it's more of a global phenomenon at this point. Obviously, there was some news Thursday that a Texas feedlot bought a big chunk of Canadian feed wheat, kind of shocked the market a little bit. We're going to continue to see some isolated stories like that. But, you know, good quality wheat, especially in the plains, is going to be tough to be used as a feed wheat, especially with some of the carries we're seeing in the market. But I think it's more of a global story at this point. We're going to continue to see some increased feed wheat, at least on the global scale.
Just a comment. I think to have a long tail, we're going to have demand destruction. And at this point, the way I view demand, we've seen a slowdown or a postponement of purchasing in the export market. So I think in order to get this, if we're going to go through a short crop, long tail scenario, I think we're going to have to see a sharp rally to the upside to actually do demand destruction. And I mean market cattle, underweight cattle to town. We need to see liquidation in the poultry herds. As far as poultry goes, we're seeing some backing off of numbers, but they can come back real quick. I think the export market can come back real quick. So I don't think there's been absolute demand destruction to get into a long tail yet. So if we're going to see that, I think higher prices are in front of us.
Well, can you talk a little bit about the cattle industry in Texas and the impact it may or may not have?
Well, the cow-calf guy has been culling all summer. He's now almost down to the point. He's half of probably what he had to start with in the spring. And now he's now down to the point not only out of hay, he's out of water. All of the ponds and tanks, they call them tanks down there, are just about on the verge of just being nothing but a mud hole. Now, most of these cow-calf pairs have made their way north. They've went into the Nebraska area where there has been good grass. But these are only the good cow-calf pairs. We have liquidated a lot of the weaker cows, cull cows. Now the calves have all gone into the feedlot much earlier than expected. So that's going to be the key. If the cattle guy gives up and moves those 500, 600, 700, 800-pound calves to market sooner, then that's when you get into demand destruction. Right now they're still sitting in there eating some of this higher-priced corn.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group. Aaron Curtis of Midco is with us, along with Greg Johnson of the Andersons and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. We'll continue here on Commodity Week in just 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A pleasant fall-like start to this week gave way to hotter and more humid weather across all of Illinois. Through the middle of the week, temperatures were near to even slightly below average. By Wednesday, however, strong southerly winds developed over Illinois as high pressure moved off to the east, and they brought the hot weather northward. Temperatures reached well into the 90s, except for far northern Illinois, on Wednesday, and topped out at 100 degrees in Quincy. More hot weather followed on Thursday, with temperatures already reaching 99 degrees by noon in western and southern Illinois. While dew points also increased, they were not nearly as high as during the heat of July. The lower dew points and strong southerly breeze made the heat just a bit more tolerable. Rainfall most of this week was limited to thunderstorms in northwestern Illinois and some light showers across the remainder of the northern half of the state on Monday afternoon and Monday night. Our short episode with the heat will come to an end this weekend as a strong cold front pushes through Illinois. It will likely be accompanied by showers and thunderstorms as it sweeps through the state Saturday and Saturday night. We'll come out on the other side of it with much cooler weather for the remainder of the Labor Day weekend. Temperatures will remain near to below normal for most of the week, with little chances for rain until perhaps next weekend. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This is the Labor Day edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Aaron Curtis of Midco, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons. Let's continue our conversation about potential demand destruction. If you had to look out, Greg Johnson and crystal ball, where does it come first? Is it in the livestock sector, the ethanol industry, and or the export market?
Well, it's probably going to have to come from the livestock sector first. We've already seen poultry numbers down. Cattle and hog guys are still hanging in there, but I'm sure they don't have coverage for any length extended period of time. So that's probably where it's going to come from initially. But some of that can be passed on. So at some point in time, if the crop really is closer to 12 billion than 13 billion, that 5 billion ethanol usage number is going to have to come down.
Do you think it's closer to 12 billion? And maybe we'll pull everybody here first. What do you think?
You take a million acres off, and then you take another three or four bushels off, and you're going to get down to 12.3, 12.4. That's closer to 12 than 13.
Well, I did do a little research before the meeting, and the 2003 exports were 1,588 million bushels. My hunch is that we, with the Russian crop and some of the other world-producing countries of the world, I think we could see a major drop of exports. And I agree with Greg that the livestock industry will be the next one that will suffer.
Yeah, I agree with Paul. I think our exports are going to suffer. We saw it this week in what CIF values did. CIF corn down 20 cents for the week. CIF beans down 40 cents. There's just not much demand there. Of course, some of that's a function of some early harvest in the South, but you can see there's just not much demand on the export side right now.
Well, the export demand can come back. There's some demand out there. But when you talk about demand destruction, you got to talk about something that they can't turn the key back on, and that's the livestock liquidation. If you start liquidating cattle early, you start liquidating hogs, that key can't be turned on real quick. Ethanol plants can shut down for a while, go to half grind, then they can go back up again. The poultry people can come back fairly quickly if they want to. So that's where you're going to have to kind of watch it. Also, you got to realize a lot of this market that we have in corn today is based upon politics of a mandate. And if you live by the sword, you can die by the sword. If you have to rely on politicians for your market, you're walking on some thin ice, especially in the current environment.
Well, let me follow up on just because we don't really hear out of Washington, D.C., or at least I haven't seen it in print, I don't think, and I've been busy at Farm Progress Show, so maybe I simply missed it. Washington talk about the mandate very much, though I've heard a couple of other radio commentators talking about it. Rush Limbaugh has discussed it a couple of times for ethanol. Are we really concerned that Washington, D.C. will take up the ethanol mandate?
I think the latest poll on confidence of your political leaders are probably about an all-time low. I'm just speculating.
Right.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised food prices become a bigger issue a year from now during the election than energy prices. And that is where you have to really be careful.
And those will be driven by the price of meat.
Yes.
Right? Does everybody agree with that? So it's
well, everything. I mean,
but the price of meat will be the one that at the counter will be the one that has to jump. We've been through here before, and the grocery stores they won't lower the price of meat, but they will raise it. But once it goes up, it's not going to come down.
Well, all food's going up, and I think one thing you're going to start hearing is people with their food stamp credit cards or whatever they're called. That may not take them through the end of the month, and then that becomes a real political issue.
That's not an exciting outlook, I have to admit. That creates a serious problem for agriculture. So let's put all this back in place and talk about what producers might think about when they go to market this crop. Many of them are wondering whether they should sell a corn crop across the scale. Some of them are saying, I've already sold way too much. I need not to do anything with this crop, and we'll start with you, Greg.
Yeah, timing's going to be extremely critical. As Dan said, the government could pull the rug out from underneath the ethanol mandate. But when will they do that? Probably not until the October crop report at the earliest, because that's when they use an actual ear weight and not just assume it's a normal ear. So that's 6 weeks away. In 6 weeks, when the market moves 20 cents a day, this market can be a lot higher. So I don't want farmers to get too excited about selling at these prices, especially if we miss the rain this weekend and bean prices become the leader. So, you know, at some point in time, we're going to have to sell corn. I don't think this is the time to do it. And when we do, we can't assume that the government's going to pull the plug, but we have to be cognizant of that fact. So the only way I can see playing this market is to use options. And I know a lot of farmers don't like to use options, but when corn could be $9 if we don't waive the mandate and China comes in and buys corn and we have another poor crop, or corn could be $5 if they do pull the mandate, we've got a $4 swing. And, you know, that's when insurance, you know, price insurance has to be part of your marketing plan.
Well, the good news is we're harvesting wheat every month of the year in the world. And the end users have a futures, a wonderful tool called the buy sell pad, you know, and use the Chicago futures market, which a lot of farmers are using it to their fullest ability. The marketplace has adjusted some pretty high-priced corn in the past and soybeans, and wonderful things can happen from efficiencies, Todd. So my idea is that I don't think it – I think it's way too early to worry about too much at liquidation, but we do know we're going to have a very snug carryover, and it's going to be very fun to see how the card game is played.
Hey, Aaron, I've got a different question for you since your company, I think, is the only one who's involved in buying and selling energies but not in producing energy. Is that right? Okay, so I think I'm safe there. Does it appear to you that ethanol and the oil industry, that the oil industry would continue to use ethanol even without the mandate, that it would make some sense to them to continue to blend ethanol into their gasoline stocks?
Yeah, it's still an economic decision. I mean, if you can still blend cheaper ethanol into unleaded gas and make money doing it, you're still going to do it, mandate or not. Even, and that's when we get back to discussion about the blender's credit. How's that going to affect? Most likely, blender's credit is probably going to go away this year. How's
well,
that going to
affect?
It will
go away at the end of the year, one
right,
way or the other.
Right. So the question is, how does that affect? But as long as the financials are still there, the blender side anyway is going to continue to splash ethanol and unleaded gas at this point.
Dan, come back to you. What does a producer do about marketing corn?
Well, I guess I'm in the camp that you need to be awful careful here over the next 30 days, 60 days or so, and be aware of a possible short crop, long tail playing out. But like I said, I don't think it's totally in the box yet. A sharply higher move out of a September crop report or maybe an October crop report would probably lay something like that on table. I've taken a look at some short crop, long tail years. Your highs can vary anywhere from mid-September to Thanksgiving. So this is where we have to kind of watch it. And I think, you know, we'll have to see what the USDA comes out with on or some numbers.
Well, I guess maybe a little bit too simplistic for me, but I still think $7.50 corn's a pretty good price, especially if you can move it across the scale and doesn't seem to be much incentive to be a storer of $7.50 corn, at least historically, and maybe replace that with some sort of option on paper, reduce your risk, increase your flexibility, and get some money in your pocket with all these variables that we've talked about here. It just seems financially prudent to be pocketing some of this money.
I'm going to go and put my binoculars on and look out the year 2012, and I like the idea of selling some December corn up in that $7 area on the futures market to get the game going.
We have spent almost 27 and a half minutes on corn. That leaves us a minute and a half for soybeans.
Well, sell beans short too far, but I am afraid that we could see a number in that 41 bushel area, and that's a head scratcher for a marketer.
Aaron Curtis?
I think beans still got a little bit of upside. We'll see what we do once we get back up to that $15 area, but obviously $15 beans out of the field is nothing to be too upset about.
Greg Johnson?
There's quite a few friendly things in the bean market. I don't think the trade has realized how bad this bean crop has been hurt. We're in the same boat we were with corn a month ago. They didn't realize how bad it was, and look what happened. So beans are in that same camp right now. The Fed may need to reinflate the economy by printing more money. That's weak dollar scenario, bullish commodities, and China demand. Last year we had a bumper crop of beans. China bought beans, and we still had $14 with a big crop. How high do we go if we have a small crop this year?
30 seconds, Dan.
There's a lot of shorts underneath $14, and we're above the base. So it's I still look at it as one giant step to higher levels.
Thank you so much to Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group, Paul Cooley of ADM, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Aaron Curtis from Midco. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.